Welcome into episode 136 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Two more games in the books, two more wins. Bruins are now 17-2, and in beyond incredible start to this season. A couple of nights ago, they had one of the more dominant games you'll ever see between two professional hockey teams. It looked like they were literally in two different leagues. I'm talking about the Bruins versus the Blackhawks. So I'm sure we'll get into that game when we bring up different players and talking points. And then obviously tonight, the Bruins defeated Tampa Bay 5-3. They were up 5-1. They got a little bit complacent in the third period, let Tampa climb back into it a little bit. But by and large, it was another just kind of like lopsided game. Patrice Bergeron recorded his 1,000th career point. And for somebody who is known for their defense, I think that this milestone really helps illustrate to people around the league who might not watch Bergeron for the last 15 years, like we've have had the privilege to, just realize how good offensively he has been as well. So I'll throw it to you guys, but the Bruins, just everything's going, it's going their way right now.
Yeah. And with Bergeron, when you put in the perspective of being only the fourth player in the nearly 100-year history of the Bruins franchise to get 1,000 in a Bruins uniform, joining Ray Bourque, Johnny Busick, and Phil Esposito, it's like, wow. Like, that's quite the list to be on. Overall, in all of NHL history, he's the 94th player to do it. So you're talking about a club of less than 100. Obviously, we know he was already a Hall of Famer. It's just another thing that gets added to that, along with the Selke record and winning a Stanley Cup and just the longevity and the remarkable career he's had, what he's meant to the Bruins for, you know, two full decades. It's crazy. And it's crazy to think about like how his career has progressed to, you know, the point where obviously in recent years he's been such an offensive catalyst, in addition to, still being a Selke Trophy caliber defensive center. For years, his line was kind of the 1B to Krejci's 1A when you had Lucic and Horton in the fold, and then, you know, Lucic and Iginla for a year. And then Bergeron ends up on a line that turns into the best line in hockey for years with Marchand and Pastrnak, and it's like, he can just do it all. Like, you put him in any role. Under Claude Julien, he got a ton of defensive zone shifts. Under Cassidy, it started shifting more to offense. It's remained, you know, more offensive tilted under Jim Montgomery. The way he's adapted on the power play to really master bumper position, that wasn't even really a spot that teams were using when his career began. Really started becoming common, I think, around like early 2010s, maybe, like ballpark that range. And he took that on for the Bruins, saw it as, you know, an area where they, you know, where he could fit, where they obviously needed someone, and has mastered that. Like, now he's a weapon on the power play. If you're going to overload and take Pastrnak away, he's going to get open in that bumper and score. And it's, just a remarkable career, and this is obviously just another milestone along the way.
It's crazy to think that like he almost like hung him up this offseason and luckily decided to not. Like, he's clearly still playing at a level that's at, you know, still in line with some of the best players in the NHL. Like, I think he could go another year after this. We'll see if he does. But it's crazy. And you mentioned him playing the bumper on the power play, even against Tampa Bay, it almost felt like they were trying to cover him so much that they left other options open. So like, he's somebody that just like draws the defenders in because they know he's so dangerous there in the bumper.
Yeah. I mean, that low pass, like right across the top of the crease, that was open quite a bit tonight. And, they do score one goal off of it, from DeBrus to Pastrnak, but yeah, part of opening up that lane is having a weapon in the bumper to draw that defend that defenseman out a little bit and not have him be able to kind of stay as tight to the goalie.
I mean, I think I guess I'll give my two cents on Bergeron because I think it's just a natural place to start, and we can dive into you know, more of the last two games in detail. But it is crazy to think about how long he's been doing it and how he just ages like fine wine out there. It's like his production has not decreased. It's even or it's gone up. It's like, you know, I think back to when he was a rookie, like I was in third grade, and you think about the line mates he's had over the years. He, you know, started off, I think it was Michael Nylander and maybe Sergei Samsonov, maybe his initial kind of set in stone line as a pro. And then over the years, like obviously, you know, guys like Recchi and Sagan, Marchand, Yager, like even
Nesson was showing his first career point because Raycroft was actually the goalie for that game, and it was Raycroft's first career shutout.
It was Ralston's goal, right? He assisted
and his line that night was with Brian Ralston and PJ Axelson.
I'm pretty
sure it was their third line.
I mean, but like he's played with so many good players over the years, but he's also played with a lot of like pedestrian players and still made those lines really solid. Like I'm talking guys like Brad Boyes, Chuck Kobusu. Like there's just random players over the years where it's like, Riley Smith is another example. Like they're good players. Marco Sturm, they're good players, but whatever line it's,
besmirch Brad Boyes.
No, Brad Boyes he was a good player, but he always found a way to elevate even those years when he wasn't playing with guys like Marchand and Sagan, and it just doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
It was really nice to see too the tribute video that they had posted for him. I'm not sure when they recorded it because I think it felt like maybe even, I don't know, it had to be recent because Crosby had that stupid mustache. But so I think it was kind of recent that they had like Ovechkin, Patrick Kane, Crosby, is a bunch of guys that also have 1,000 points, filmed a video for him saying congrats, like enjoy your celebration. It was really nice to see. And so it had a lot of great players on it that are still in the league that had the 1,000 points, which was really, really nice. And I love that they all planned beforehand. Marchand was saying they all had it planned that when he scored his 1,000th point, they're all just going to rush the ice and jump on him, which they did. So, you know, you don't get moments like that very often. I wish it was when Scott and I were there. It was like a home game and we could have witnessed it because that would have been really nice. But it was still really exciting to see them all just completely mob him. And also in the same time, just know that they're all just so genuinely friends with each other and happy for him that it was just a good moment.
Yeah, they were trying to get him in on Saturday, clearly. They were like, I mean, obviously that game was a blowout. So like the last 5-7 minutes, whatever, whenever he was on the ice, they were just feeding him. Everyone's just trying to get him the puck. Also on the celebration, it reminded me this is like weird, but one of my favorite weird things in sports is when you get like the group of hockey players together like that, and like the guys on the edge of it are just like jumping in place. It just looks so funny. Like
Taylor Hall, is that who we're talking about here?
It's like there are a few guys doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead, Bri.
No. I was just gonna say it's it's just really, really fortunate to have for us to be able to watch Bergeron. And you know, Bridget, I know you mentioned there was some moments of uncertainty this offseason if he was going to come back. I kind of always felt like he was going to.
We're going to go through the same thing this offseason, and I feel like here's the thing: like they win the Stanley Cup, does he go out on top, or does he go, oh, okay, we could run this back? That's what I don't know.
it just depends on we'll have to focus on next year, but there were definitely, I think he had 1,000 set in his mind this offseason. I think that's something he wanted to accomplish. And obviously he knew that the Bruins were going to have a really good team this year, but I mean, Stanley Cup champion, they're going to rename the Selke after him one day. He has 4 or 5 Selkies
Five.
And he should have at least, he should probably have seven. I mean, there were a couple of years there where he was a finalist where they just gave it to somebody else to spread the love. And it's like, well, that's not really in the spirit of a trophy. You know, two-time gold medalist, I think, in the Olympics. And so he has, I mean, first ballot Hall of Famer. So any final thoughts from you guys on his milestone before we move on?
No, I think we can get into the game.
All right. So yeah, my biggest takeaway from the last two games in general is Jim Montgomery, and we've touched on this a little bit in the past, but Jim Montgomery seems to really like, and for good reason, that check line of Krejci, Pasternak, and Pavel Zacha. And we mentioned it in preseason, they looked good, but it's tough to gauge preseason because it's mix and match lineups. And when they went to them again in the Chicago game, and I was kind of surprised because I thought Hall was playing with some juice, and he looked like he was bringing his skating legs. And even then, in the midst of a rout, Montgomery went to the check line and to start tonight's game in Tampa. And unless there was some juggling because of injuries or whatnot, he went back to that line again for the whole game. So obviously that means that with DeBrusk, with Marchand and Bergeron, you have Krejci, Pasternak, and Zacha, then that puts Taylor Hall down to the third line, which in name surprises me, but I do see the chemistry between those three countrymen.
Yeah, I do. And I thought they played well again Monday night. I still wonder if I mean, let's remember last year, the Bruins started with Hall and Coyle together on the second line, and it didn't work. They never really clicked. I still question whether that's really a good match if you're going to have Hall on that third line for anything more than like a game or two here and there. Just because like I don't think Taylor Hall like is really suited to play this sort of slow down, hold on to the puck, you know, cycle it type of game that Coyle and Trent Frederick are going to play if they're on that line. And, you know, maybe Jim Montgomery sees something, or maybe he wants to put Hall there to try to force him, you know, to kind of play that way a little more. Like, it could be something like that. I still think ultimately I do think the best fit is with Hall in the second line, but like I said this on one of the recent podcasts, it's like everything Montgomery does works. They just keep winning anyway, so it doesn't matter. Like, whatever. I don't know. Make Tomas Nosek your top line right wing. Like, who cares? They're going to win anyways, and he's probably going to get a hat trick if you do it. So everything's working now. So like I've said before, like, you have the luxury of being able to juggle stuff up and put guys in different places. You know, Jim Montgomery has said he wants everyone to be able to play with everyone. So you can obviously take this time now to do it while you're rolling. So Zacha has definitely been a fit, but I thought he was a fit on the third line too. So it's not, you know, it's not like he wasn't clicking where he was or whatever. I don't know, try it out and see if Hall can get going with Coyle, and see if, you know, they can develop some chemistry so that even if you don't stick with it, you at least have that in your back pocket at some point.
I have so many thoughts on this. So first of all, the other day I was saying I wanted DeBrusk to go back on the first line, which he did. I just think he's more suited for that role. And that just, in my mind, he's a factor on that line and less of a factor when you throw him back on the second or third line. I did think Hall, with that third line with Frederick and Coyle, did have some decent chemistry today. I thought it didn't look bad. And Hall made a nice play where he did slow the puck down, waited, was patient, got it to Frederick, and then ended up in the Coyle goal.
Yeah.
So that was a really smart hockey play that Hall made, just having the sense not to jumped the gun and shoot it and, you know, waited for the right option, because he knew there were guys coming trailing behind him, and he waited to make the right pass to Frederick, and then it ends up with the goal. So I didn't mind him playing there for today. And also, it's almost like, all right, you got the first line, and then your second line is also kind of like a first line. And then your third line, if you have Taylor Hall on it, it's more like a second line. And so you're just kind of like, everything is very front loaded, and you have at least one really skilled player on all three of your lines. If you have, you know, say like Marchand is your guy on the first line, even though the whole first line skilled, Pasternak's your second line most skilled player, and then you got Taylor Hall on the third line, and you just have it like spread out all those guys that bring that those different levels of high caliber skill. And I also feel like you have kind of a balance of like guys with really good hockey sense and, you know, playmakers that are going to get your assists. So like Coyle is good at setting up people for goals. At Krejci, obviously, Bergeron, obviously, and feels like those kind of guys are spread out throughout your top three lines as well. So it almost feels like with Hall, there is on the third line, there is a certain balance. When you have Zacha with the second line, it might not work forever, but that's kind of how I felt about it today. And then, sorry, you can go ahead. You can cut me off. I have more to say, but
yeah, just before we get off the Hall and the third line, like you're right, they did score. I just thought that was kind of the exception to the rule for the night. I thought other than that, they really struggled to generate and spent a lot of time in their own zone. Bruins got out attempted 9-2 when they're on the ice, and scoring chances were 7-1 for Tampa. You know, that goal was the only scoring chance that they created as a line.
Yeah, I just could see that there was potential, at least with Coyle and Hall, more so than we had seen previously. I thought that it looked better.
You know, I think either way, whether it's the third line or the second line that Hall or Zacha are on, you know, the last two games are just, it's a good microcosm of the depth that the Bruins have, because against the Blackhawks, they had 11 players record a point. And obviously the Blackhawks are a basement dweller lottery team this year, right? And it's a home game, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, then they go on the road and they play Tampa, which is a much stiffer opponent, obviously. And they have 12 players record a point. So it's they're getting it from up and down the lineup. And that also tells you that they're getting scoring at 5-on-5, too, not just the power play, not just their top guys. Yeah, so I'm interested. I am interested in the Hall Zacha thing. I thought it was kind of random, but because I also thought that Zacha was playing well in the third line, like somebody else. Bridget, I think you mentioned that, or maybe it was Scott. I forget. But anyway, I thought it was worth bringing that up for a cup of coffee. You know, I'm looking at the box score of the last two games. It's kind of tough to pick a place to start or a player to talk about, because everybody's pitching in.